All right, so here we are. This is the fourth annual Read Comics podcast.
Fourth annual. Nice.
Because we've all been within the last month. So.
Time moves differently.
We won't have another one for another, a whole year.
Jalen's so young.
All right, we have Susie with us via Skype.
Yes.
And here in Minneapolis, we have Florence.
And Jason.
And Marty. And Juan.
And Juan?
Okay,
and
we don't have Juan.
No.
We
that
killed him.
We'll have to find some other way to keep you interested.
And we're all really tired tonight.
Yes.
So, this is gonna rock.
Just wait. It'll be the funniest podcast yet.
Imagine all the pratfalls listeners are missing.
Now, I suggested earlier to Marty that something that would really help us be much more natural and comfortable would be for us all to drink during the podcast. You know, just start doing shots. And after the third round, we'll be fine.
And I would be sad.
I have no trouble talking.
There are actually podcasts I listen to where you
oh,
can
yeah.
hear over the course of the hour to hour and a half that the podcast is, where the people will start stone sober, and around the 45-minute mark, their words are starting to slur a little bit. Around the hour and a half, you're like, these people are going to pass out any second.
It's funny, actually, last night I watched a DVD of Neil Gaiman doing a reading where he read one of his stories, which was, it's basically called An Experiment on the Effects of Alcohol on Writing.
Okay.
And, yeah, he, in the process, he takes a drink and starts talking and talking about writing, and it just goes, delves into, after about the third drink, talking about somebody he heard on television say that the amount of one elephant's ejaculate would feed an anthill for a year, which then sends him on a little tangent about the poor ants who have to eat nothing but elephant spunk for a year. It's rather amusing.
I wonder if, like, a single spermazoa, like, to an ant, if that is quantifiable, if they'd be able to see it.
I don't think so.
Are they much smaller than that?
Well,
yes,
I
ants
so.
Aren't microscopic, and sperm
yeah.
are.
There you go.
But ants are much, 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 much closer in size comparative to us to sperm.
Well, exactly.
And ants don't have microscopic vision.
Well, how do you know?
I don't think that they can see smaller things than we can see.
Okay, putting it back to comic books then. So can
Superman
can
see sperm.
Turn tiny microscopic size, and they then ride sperm.
Who
so
did
like
you say?
Adam or Ant-Man.
Ant-Man, yeah, basically.
Well, except Ant-Man can't go microscopic, can he?
He can't, because, well, the Atom, the premise of him is he can ride atoms. He can ride, somehow, he can ride the atoms that go through a phone line, from one phone to another, to travel
right.
distances, which is just wrong.
Has that changed with fiber optics? Have they figured out the effect of fiber optics on the atom's capability to travel?
Is he back to the airports
like
the rest of us?
Jumping through a tube? I think that would be way more plausible to me, like going into a tube, a tiny, 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 tiny tube, and getting out somewhere else than
and
riding
what happens,
electrons that go through a telephone wire.
What happens if, you know, he calls somebody and the call is forwarded to their cell phone?
The person just kind of hangs up. Or does it answer? Is he, like, stuck?
He's, like, stuck in the phone,
in
basically.
In the phone
Yeah.
Stuck in
and
the
what
tubes.
Well, so,
yeah,
it's interesting.
The whole concept, I think, is incorrect.
Well, you know, it's interesting because we were just talking yesterday about the speed of electricity and the speed of, through copper. and how it's not light speed, it's actually around 2/3 the speed of light through standard copper wire. Now, there's different resistance based on, you know, the type of, you know, wire and all that kind of jazz, but generally speaking, copper is like 2/3 the speed of light. But the thing is, the copper atoms aren't moving. They are moving, but they're moving much.
We think it was the speed of light.
They're moving much, much slower. Like they move.
Why do we think it should be the speed of light?
Well, because the signal moves, you know, at like approximately 2/3 the speed of light. Like right now, our Skype conversation is moving or transferring, you know, at approximately 2/3 the speed of light. That does not mean any of the wire that is carrying that signal is transferring that fast. Because basically it's like, and this was according to the guy at work who knows a lot about physics. Basically,
what does he know about superhero physics?
These are like, it's like billiard balls, you know,
there
it's like a line of billiard balls.
I could quantify superhero physics. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
what did you say, Susie?
There's definitely been books that have tried to, like, actually, decide if things like the atom traveling through phone wires is plausible, or somehow we could get there through physics. I don't have any of them. But I know
I'd love to see that, like, chapter after chapter. Is this plausible scientifically? No.
Actually, the guy who wrote those books, he has lectured at the University of Minnesota, and he comes to Convergence somewhat frequently, I think.
Oh, cool.
I wonder if he's on the roster for this big 10th year anniversary bash.
Dunno. Yeah, we've overruled your...
Yeah,
your
no,
physics.
No one cares about how electricity travels through a wire.
Only in terms of you know, Electro attacking Spider-Man or, you know, Black Lightning from the Justice League.
Yeah, no, that's a fun thing about supervillains is so often, their powers are just so useful. They could make tons of money with their actual powers that don't involve criminal activity. Like, Electro could basically, you know, get the Nobel Peace Prize for, like, eliminating tons of fossil fuel use. Because he has his own, like, electric generator.
But would he have to...
Clean.
Does that mean he'd have to... He'd be stuck?
Like hamster in a wheel?
I mean, would the government just take him as a fuel source and plug him in?
The whole world.
Well, haven't we done that yet? Like, he's a pretty bad criminal. He gets caught every time. Why isn't, like, some...
This is true!
...enterprising judge just be like, okay, we'll use him as a battery.
Exactly. Oh, my God, that would be awesome. Actually, that was in a...
Phil Bendis.
That was in the recent Action Comics arc. The
uh-huh.
bad guys used one of the Legion of Superheroes as a power, well, kind of a power source.
Lightning Lad?
No, it was actually Sun Boy.
Ah.
They were using Sun Boy to change the color of Earth's sun to red, thus stripping Superman of his powers.
And what about the rest of earthly life that was dependent on?
Yeah, they didn't really talk about what the red sun, how that affected.
Yeah.
Like, well, this was the 31st century. So they had, you know, things to, like, the greenhouses. Oh, I'm gonna take this.
Oh,
hello.
Jason's taking a phone call in the middle of our podcast.
So this is a good experiment on how much background noise we can tolerate in the podcast.
Well, the funny thing is, like, just as right as that happened, I pulled my phone out of my pocket and, like, turned the ringer on right before Jason's phone rang.
No.
So it could have been yours.
Yeah.
But it wasn't. So, you
yes.
never commented on the Suburban Glamour post.
Oh, yeah. Well, like, you pretty much said what I wanted to say. I mean, I could say some stuff about the art.
Yeah.
I was trying to find what the... Nah, I can't find words. The art felt very clean to me. Like, it didn't have a whole lot of... It was just a lot of line work and coloring and not all that, and not too much shading.
It's true. But, like, really well evoked characters. I mean, especially the main girl. I felt like her eyes were so good.
Like, all the characters definitely looked distinctive, and you could tell who's who. And that's sometimes a problem with, like, some very well-renowned artists, is that, like, every female character looks exactly the same, except maybe one's taller than the other.
Yeah, I almost felt like Girls from the Lunar Brothers was almost, like, a riff on that, like, at times, because... of their seeming inability to draw anything other than their basic girl.
I mean, they're getting better. And
they are. They try to branch out a little bit in that with the townsfolk.
You can give them credit for, like, having a wide variety of shapes and looks and colors and hair in their people. But, like, even their males, even, like, the old men and the young women, like, the beautiful girls, their faces all look very, very similar to me.
That's true. They aren't good with ages. Well, in the new comic, I'm enjoying it, Sword, a lot. Although it feels like forever since I got an issue, but yeah, I've been having the same problem with that. Like, other than length of hair, it's very difficult to distinguish any of the characters right now.
Uh-huh. Which I've only read the first issue of that, but I'm looking forward to the rest. So
yes,
it's very intriguing.
It is all stacked on your shelf to go in the next package.
Yay!
So you guys didn't really talk about how you both simultaneously purchased that series.
Yes, it was a kind of serendipitous sister psychic thing where we had the same process of picking it up, where I was in the local comic book shop and saw the fourth issue of Suburban Glamour. I'm like, what's that? That looks interesting. And I pick it up and see that it's 404, and I look, and my shop has, like, all the previous three issues, and I picked them up and took them home, having knowing nothing about it, and read it all, like, right away, and liked it, and was put it in a box to send to Florence, and then, like, later I get a copy of an email she sent one of our cousins discussing, like, this mini-series about a girl who finds out she's a changeling that she happened to pick up. And so when I started talking to her, I asked her, hey, is that Suburban Glamour? She's like, yeah. And you tell them how you found it.
Yep, exactly. It was exactly the same story. It was issue 404, that cover. And I wouldn't have even gotten it, except that Marty was lingering over something else, and I was bored and kind of milling around, and it caught my eye eventually. And as soon as I opened it, I felt like, oh, I can't read this because this is 404. Like, I can't get spoiled. So then I started searching for the other issues, and they only had two in my case. And I had to special order the other two. So the next time we went to the shop, it was with the rest of our pull.
Uh-huh.
And then I came home and put it to the top of my pile. And I really enjoyed it. It was, like, exactly what I was looking for when I first saw it. So yay for dependable fairy changeling teenage girls.
Yeah.
Stories of alienation and self-discovery. It's such a reliable, like... And yet, it just has not gotten old for me. I still get all swept up in it, and I always identify with the girl, no matter how old I get.
Yeah. Totally right, that, like, idea that you're something more than you seem is very appealing.
Well, and also, like, the power to choose your destiny, you know, to have more options and then get to, you know, not get swept up in them, to get to make, you know, decide where you belong yourself.
Yep.
Always. So I'm reading Ex Machina right now.
Okay.
How far have you gotten in that?
I've read all of the trade paperbacks that you guys have, which I think is 1 through 3. But I have not read anything since then. I just haven't made the effort to get any.
Well, we actually got them from the library, so you should check that out.
I'm pretty sure my library does have them. It's been a long time since I've been to the library because I have so much backlog of stuff to read.
Yeah.
Like, and I have a great library that stocks a ton of comic books. Just don't make any use of it.
You know, I don't feel like you should be in any hurry to read them. I feel like, you know, there is an end to the story. Like, it's supposed to be like Y, and that they're going to have an end. And they're nowhere fucking near it. It's just so far away that, like, I mean, so we read, you know, four, five, and six.
Well, I'm in the middle
recently.
Of six.
Well, Florence is in the middle of six. And they're like, it's not spoon feeding. They're like drip feeding.
It's true. I'm hard pressed to tell you anything significant that happened in the 2.5 trade paperbacks I've read this week.
Oh, right. I cannot remember what happened in which trade paperback.
Yeah. Well, and they have distinct plots that are actually separate from the main plot. So, I mean, there is stuff going on, and it's interesting, it's totally good, too. It's great.
No, totally. It's well written, and it, like, three-dimensional characters, I think. Although some of them are incomprehensible in their motives to me, but...
There's just an overall plot that is not, you know, moving, really, at all. We're talking about Ex Machina. Jason's giving me, like, questioning looks because he's back from his phone call.
Yeah, so it's not a case of, like... Like, in some stories, you know, I'll take Sandman as a example, like, where Neil had sort of, like, a clear beginning, middle, and end that he wanted to tell. And he figured it would take maybe around 50 issues, and then he hit 50 and was still, like, at the beginning of the middle. But he just had more story and more story that he wanted to tell, and, you know, it was going good, so he kept going to, like, up to, like, 75 issues to get to the end. Whereas, so this is more like, we just want to draw it out?
Well, there's also the difference of when these things were written. I mean, when Neil wrote Sandman, it was still at the time where you got an issue of a comic and you got a full story.
Yeah.
Where we're in the era now where you get an issue of a comic and you get a part of the story that's going to be told in the trade.
Yeah, no, that's very true.
And that's why, when you said you're getting the story drip-fed to you rather than just eking it out, that's the case. I mean,
yeah, but we're really
all storytelling
we're in a transition now where I think
still feeling like
trades are sort of overtaking single issues in sales.
Really?
Yeah,
oh, yeah.
I've been hearing that. I could be wrong.
Right. No,
I'm not an expert.
I kind of feel like we should be doing that.
If they're not overtaking, they're definitely gaining on them. And so there is more of a focus on creating the issues in order to make them a better trade.
Well, you have a bigger market for trades right now than you do for single issues. Because you have single issues. Where do you have single issues? You have single issues in the comic shop.
Online and in comic book shops, yeah.
Where do you have trades? You have trades in the comic shop, online, Borders, Barnes & Noble, the libraries, everywhere. Everywhere books are sold, you have trades, but you don't have the comics. They're not in all the places that they used to be.
The stuff's over a month old,
So...
Which is why we need a comic book library.
Yes, our comic book library that we will have someday when we get sponsors. And by sponsors, I mean like the millionaire uncle that we didn't know we had who kicks off and leaves all their money to us.
And you have to have the dedicated staff, too.
Well, you know, if it's a millionaire uncle, then we can get paid out of that.
We all become staff.
People who can devote their time to like running, organizing, and running the shop that you maintain the library out of.
Oh my god!
So you don't have people just walking in, taking the comics and never coming back.
What a horrible job that would be to run and maintain a comic book library. Oh my god! I think I would go nuts. I would hate it. Hate it.
But see, that's where the, eccentric millionaire uncle comes in, because you may love it, that job, but you wouldn't be able to maintain any kind of lifestyle based on it unless you got paid a steady wage.
Yes, I think that we'd all immediately taken that inheritance as salary in our minds.
So we each need a rich uncle.
Or one very rich uncle.
Yes. Or government grants. Government grants.
I think you overestimate a grant versus the rich uncle. And the grand is like $100.
Our rich Uncle
yes.
Sam.
Here, $3,000. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm thinking if soldiers and teachers are going to pay shit, I'm not sure how I would rank in the government's list of priorities.
Private grants. Private grants. Lots and lots of them.
And by that, you mean spare change from strangers on the street.
Well, and the subscribers to the comic book library would be coming in and getting a membership in order to be able to check out the trade paperbacks and bring them back. They wouldn't be able to check out the single issues, you know. Those they would have
okay.
to stay and read.
But they could check out
but
trades.
They could check out trades.
Okay.
But they'd have to get a membership.
Which would cost what?
Well, like an annual membership would cost like $40.
Okay. So $40, and they could read as many trade paperbacks or single issues if they were in the store.
Yep.
That would still not cover the stock.
Well, no. Everyone can actually... everyone can read them. Like, you can just come in and read them off the street. But so, yeah,
okay.
I mean, we would need essentially 1,000 subscribers to pay one of our salaries.
Plus, and, you'd still have to accumulate the stock.
Well, see, and there we go. With the stock, you know, we take bequests of comic book collections.
So we need to start with a lot of people dying.
Okay.
To kick it off.
Or
not necessarily dying. Just
oh.
people who, like, have a huge, massive comic book collection, Susie, and decided to donate their collection to the library for the greater good.
Well, you
okay.
know, what I was thinking...
See, what I think is that a lot of comic book collectors, people who are collectors, are hoarders and treasurers, and so what you would end up with, people donating all the crap they bought and then decided they didn't like... And so you'd have, like, 50 issues of a really mediocre, like, Fantastic Four Ghost Rider crossover. That would be the entire stuff.
You know, I actually had a rather large collection that I ended up getting rid of. Now, I sold it to Shinders, which doesn't exist anymore. You know, got paid very little for it.
Uh-huh.
And there were some good items in there. There was, like, a
yeah.
First printing of Killing Joke. There were, I don't know, various other things. Because, you know, I was buying everything as it was coming out.
Yeah.
And I don't remember. At its height, it was not as big as, say, the collection that Mike... One of our fellow podcasters,
yeah.
who's not here tonight, his collection is, you know, much bigger than mine was at the time.
Okay.
But at the time that I sold it, even though I didn't get much money,
mm-hmm.
I'd like to think that at the time I would have, you know, decided, okay, I'm getting out of comics. I'm not going to collect them anymore.
Yeah.
And I don't want to move these boxes around anymore. I'd like to think that if there was a
mm-hmm.
place that I could have donated them, that I would have. And in
yeah.
fact, someone did recently.
I mean, no, I agree. Like, I would totally donate the mediocre Fantastic Four Ghost Rider.
But not the Killing Joke?
Series. No, yeah. Like, what I do now is, I've got basically one big IKEA bookshelf full of comic books and growing. And I do occasionally just sort of go through it and be like, am I ever going to read this again? And then if I'm not, I basically take a stack and set it in the lobby of my building, and by, like, the very next day, it's all gone.
Nice.
And if there was a place, you know, that had, like, donate it, and we will distribute it to children, or to, you know, if it's not appropriate for children, distribute it to people it would be appropriate for, I would totally do that.
You know, there are probably plenty of organizations in the greater Chicago area that would gladly take those. I'm thinking, like... youth centers and stuff, they just,
mm-hmm.
you'd have to take them there and give them
right.
to them.
So what we really need is a rich uncle who is also a comic book collector to die.
Well, there was that bequest that was given to the University of Minnesota.
Let's apply to Stan Lee.
You know what?
I kind of think of him as my adopted grandpa.
Your crazy adopted grandfather.
Well, that's the fun of it.
Uncles aren't cool unless they're crazy.
Yeah.
So what is this bequest to you then?
Yeah, so there was a guy that died,
they just
wanted to get rid of their collection.
They got rid of their collection.
It was
of comics.
Over 100,000 comics, I think.
Wow.
And it went to the University of Minnesota, and it's in their, you know, one of their, like, vaults now.
Yeah,
well,
you have
like,
to. Well, it's
can
funny.
Can we all go? I mean,
yeah, well, anybody can make an appointment and go, and, you know, there are archival copies now, so you have to make an appointment, and you get trained on how to handle them, and you have to put on the white gloves and stuff, and probably turn
the
pages
idea,
with tongs.
I'm being trained with respect.
It was funny in the newspaper articles what they decided to advertise as what represented his collection, because you know
uh-huh.
they said 100,000 comics. Including complete runs of Sandman and what was the other one that they had said?
As if like half of us don't have
yeah,
Sandman
I'm like,
collected.
it's not hard to get a complete run of Sandman
right.
even,
I mean,
even now.
yeah, the trade paperbacks have been printed like gone into several different editions and each one of them have been printed 6 or 7 times. Yeah.
But, I mean, I think it was the original print
run
of Sandman.
Well, even the original print run, even if you want to get single issues.
It was hugely popular.
Some of those
yeah.
are worth a lot of money, the earlier ones.
Yeah, there are certain issues that, like, if you get a hold of them, they're in great condition.
Well,
but,
that's exactly
yeah,
it.
But
like,
still, it's, yeah, that in of itself is not the mark of, like, a true collector.
Right.
Now, if they had said complete run of something that's been around since, you know, the 50s or
yeah.
even the 60s.
Maybe the DC line or whatever.
Well, even if they had said a complete run of The Amazing Spider-Man,
uh-huh.
I'd be more impressed
okay.
than a complete run of the Sandman.
A 75
I mean,
issue of Sandman that was, you know, went from 1989 to 1998.
Yeah, exactly.
Not that it's not wonderful.
No, no, but I mean, and again, like, it was not an unknown, you know, that people
right.
discovered later.
But yeah, there are probably plenty of people who have a complete run of Sandman.
Yeah.
Well, Marty is going to start reading a run of a comic that I'm really excited that he is going to start reading this, and that
okay.
is the 1990s Starman series. Have you read those, Susie?
No, I haven't. I've heard good things, but
oh,
I have
my.
Not read that. Who wrote it?
James Robinson.
Uh-huh.
It's another library
no.
find.
It's, Marty has the first trade here, written by James Robinson, drawn by Tony Harris. Do you recognize the name Tony Harris?
No.
No.
I think he's the one who's doing Ex Machina, isn't he?
Oh, really?
I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
Grab one
that,
of the,
I mean, that art certainly looks like it.
Yeah.
Grab one of the
They're
trades.
They're just not names that, like, I recognize.
Yeah.
Well, James Robinson also did did a JSA run.
Yeah, Tony Harris is Ex Machina.
Yeah. So Tony Harris draws Ex Machina, and he drew the Starman series. James Robinson wrote a JSA arc that was quite good. And what Starman is, it's a reinvention of a Golden Age character, and this is the Golden Age character's son, who
okay.
is a reluctant hero, and, you know...
I think I have a vague notion of what his costume looks like. Does it
leather,
have a rocket cap?
No. No, he has a leather jacket and goggles.
Uh-huh.
And he flies because he has a cosmic rod. Not like that. Not like that.
Well, how, what's it like then, Jason?
Well, it's shiny.
Is it glistening?
And Later this month, at the end of this month, the one of the problems with the Starman trades is that, and you know, I know you got this from the library and you started reading it, the trades are missing issues, and you know this because you looked. And so
they're
the trades
like
don't collect
one-offs?
Every single issue. Yeah, they're basically the trades collect the arcs, but some of the one-off issues aren't included. Plus, there's these things called Shade's Journal, the Shade being one of the kind of villains, kind of not.
Does he have anything to do with Shade the Changing Man?
I don't think they're related, no.
Okay, so I've heard good things about that, too.
This, basically, Starman is kind of like... You could almost have been including it as a Vertigo title. But in the DC universe.
Right, it felt kind, like a bit of a predecessor.
Kind of in the same way that Sandman...
And Swamp Thing.
And Swamp Thing,
yeah.
Yeah. But at the end of the month, Starman is going to be coming out in deluxe hardcover omnibus editions that include all the issues and all the backups, the Shade's Journal, all the various things like that.
Is the art like all remastered and... recolored and all that, like they've been
as
doing
far
with
as I can tell, yeah.
Absolute stuff.
Yep, yep. But I really like James Robinson's writing. The way he wrote this was really good. Oh, here it is. He wrote JSA The Golden Age.
Oh, I've read that.
Yeah.
I just didn't recognize the name.
That's James Robinson. And he is going to be taking over Superman, actually. And I'm really excited to see what he does. With Superman. Not Action Comics, but Superman.
Okay. Well, maybe I'll have to see if my library has it.
Yep. Sorry, we can't loan it to you since that's where we got ours.
We could. You could probably get it back to us in time.
Or you could bring this trade. You could recheck it out when we go to Chicago. And she could read it while we're in Chicago. Or you could look at your local library.
Yeah, I could look at my local library.
Yeah, her library really is pretty awesome.
I also got a couple of Iron Man trade paperbacks from the library.
So, do you have reason to believe that these are particularly good representations of that run, or are they just random selections?
Yeah, they're just what the library had. So, yes. So, no, basically.
Yeah, because that's part of what I think... has made it tough for me to get into, like, the big Marvel or DC, you know, stuff. Unless it's from a particularly good writer or an interesting arc.
Yeah.
It's, yeah.
There's some spotty stuff out there.
I would say the majority of it, in my opinion, is spotty. It's, there's some, I mean, it's just because there's just such sheer volume of it over years
and, well,
and different
true.
Titles.
And, like,
and,
I kind of, I'm, like, very periphery into both of the main universes. I read Birds of Prey regularly, and then I read, I'll, like, buy trade paperbacks of, like, a Batman, if it looks interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So, for that's it for DC for me. Like, I know a ton of other stuff, and I have read other stuff in the past, but, like, I can't keep up with the current stuff. And with Marvel, I read a few more, but, like, not any of the, like, core ones.
Right, I mean, we only read X-Men because of Joss.
Right.
Right now.
Which isn't even, like, close to being the core, like, in the continuity at all.
Really?
It's so late.
I was going to say, yeah, there's no way you can keep it in the continuity.
Yeah, because it's just been delayed and delayed and delayed.
How are you guys liking Runaways?
I've loved Runaways since, like, the very first issue.
Well, I should clarify. How have you been liking Runaways since Joss took it over?
I do like it. Like, it's not, it doesn't quite feel the same.
Mm-hmm.
Which is odd because the, you know, when Brian K. Vaughan was writing it, it felt incredibly Joss-like.
Yeah, you know, I know exactly what you mean. I find that I don't get as, like, giddy about a new issue with Joss's run as I did before. But
and
I don't, like, dislike it.
Been coming out so few and far between.
That's possibly true as well.
Because, like,
so
as I read it, I'm really, like, into it.
I just made that connection. I had no idea that was the same writer as
Astonishing X-Men.
No, you're talking about Brian K. Vaughan.
Yeah, Brian K. Vaughan.
No, he created
Ex Machina.
Yeah. Brian K. Vaughan is incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, There's really nothing he's written that I haven't enjoyed. Well, let me take that back. There's nothing he's written that I haven't enjoyed, except for the last issue of Why the Last Man, which I felt was very pointless in my mind. I should have just ended it with 59.
Anyway,
oh, come on! Let's fight! Let's fight!
Well, I didn't read it. I don't really know.
I will say I did like it. I thought it was a good, like, ending to everything.
And I guess that's what I felt I didn't need, was I didn't need a coda. I didn't need an ending to wrap everything up for me.
Uh-huh.
I was fine.
Right. Like, everything had, any loose threads had already been cut and tied off. In all the previous issues, but this was—I don't know—I like. I think I wrote a post about it. Just it reminded me so much of like the final chapter of Lord of the Rings, where like everything has already ended. Like they finished their hero quest and everything, and then they just have all gone home, and you sort of go along with them for the next however many years.
Well, it's kind of like the coda at the end of Harry Potter. And the Deathly Hallows.
Mm-hmm.
Which I also enjoy.
You know, it's cute and all, but it's not really necessary. It's almost like a way for the author to cap it off in such a way that
nobody could pick it up again.
Exactly.
Yeah, right. People will kind of shut up about asking for another one. Well, and yeah, so my feeling about Why the Last Man, though, is that that coda wasn't to wrap up his personal story. It was to wrap up, like, okay, how exactly is the human race going to continue? You know, it was kind of wrapping up the larger arc of, you know, are we all as a race going to come to an end?
And that was the part that I didn't really care about.
Well, no, I didn't care as much about that as I did about his story, but I felt like that, you know, that was information that we didn't get from the end of the prior issue.
That's interesting because having only read a small arc in the middle, that was the only story that I really cared about.
Was what's going to happen to the human race?
Yeah, maybe I should just read that last issue.
There you go. I wonder what part of the story they're going to use for the movie, though.
I'd imagine the whole thing. I mean, not a lot happens.
Yeah, I guess you're right. I mean, 60 issues, 5 years, but you're right. It doesn't really cover a whole...
Yeah,
a lot of action.
That's the thing, like, the movie is going to be so much shorter and more condensed, and, like, you probably will get, like, a much more self-contained story, because the 50 issues or 60 issues, I guess it was, you know, we followed the main three characters or so, but you also sort of got a big scope of the effect of the plague that it had on the whole world.
Right. And that's going to, I mean, in a movie form, that's going to feel much more like snippets here and there as they go through. You're not going to get the sense of scope and time.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I don't even know if people reading the trade paperbacks after it's all done would get the same sense of that we got from reading it issue to issue in real time over the years.
And I can't imagine the whole, having it be so condensed. Then when you find out what caused the plague, it's just going to be like, da-da-da-da, that's what caused it at the end.
You know, and I have to be honest, that was kind of a letdown for me as well.
I thought that was kind of calculated. Like, you're built up, like, what on earth, you know, and then, this is what happened.
My total feeling was that, and this is what happened, I'm like, huh.
Right, and I think that's the characters sort of go through that, too.
Yeah, I suppose.
It's inherently dumb, you know, for the human race to be brought down. Yeah, stupid shit that we could have
avoided. Which we're very, very carefully not saying. So
yeah, totally. I'm like,
and hasn't read this, or who might be participating in the conversation and hasn't read it, will not be spoiled.
Although I have to say that...
Except to know that it's a little bit of a letdown.
Right. The biggest downside for me about how popular it got by the end is that I was spoiled in like 5 different publications about the ending. And not, like, just a couple of key things about it, but I was so pissed. Like, I do not usually have to avoid spoilers for comic books.
This is true. That's, like, the nice thing about our little niche.
Right. I mean, it's not like,
well,
as long as we avoid, like, certain forums and, you know, don't buy Wizard, we can pretty much stay unspoiled.
Not so much anymore.
The rest of the world isn't interested.
I mean, when the New York Times starts talking about Captain America and another recent development, which I suppose I can really say this because, you know, it was in the New York Times. Do you know what I'm talking about, Susie?
No, I don't.
I should
read the New York Times. And I don't read Marvel. So
a certain character.
Continuity.
A certain character is returning to life in the DC universe.
The character that you mentioned in your previous sentence, perhaps?
Which did I say?
Are we saying Starman?
No. No. Hey.
Wait, is he wear red, white, and blue?
No, not Captain America. That's that's Marvel.
Oh, Flash?
Oh, the Flash, yes. The Flash is coming back to life.
They kind of did that with their little DC Universe Zero.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Did you read that?
I did read that. It was included in my free comic book
really?
Package.
Oh.
Yeah.
I had to pay for that, but it was only 50 cents.
Yeah. I might have paid for it, too. I just know, like, when they handed me my subscriptions, that was in it.
How was your free comic book day?
It was good. My comic book shop is great, and they had a like pretty wide selection, although some of it was stuff left over from previous years. And they had, you know, one table that was sort of like more adults, and one table that was all ages. And
so
they had a pretty good crowd of both adults and other and not adults.
Do you have to? Were you limited with the numbers that you could pick, or could you take?
You could take one of anything.
Okay.
Not like just one comic, but like if a selection they have.
Sure.
You could take, you know, one of each one.
Because I have to say that this year I was a little disappointed in what the Source had, although we got there a lot later this year than we did last year.
Really? Despite the early morning breakfast?
Oh, yeah. We had to wait in line a lot longer than we had to last year.
I am not sure that's true. I think we got there later last year, and that's why we had to wait in line less long.
because
basically there's like a ton of people right as they open. And then as the day progresses, the place emptied out. Like, by the time we left, there was no line.
I went around 1:30 to my local shop, and it was like, there were plenty of people in it, but like, everybody could get in. There was
well,
no line.
Last,
you might have to wait, like, after three people to get to the table, but there was no line.
Last year, we got the bag, and the bag had every single comic that was advertised on the website in it. This year, we got the bag, and it had 20 of the comics that was advertised in it. And then we ended up going to a different shop and getting the ones that weren't there. And we did get a couple of duplicates because I didn't see them in our bag. But, like, Maintenance Number Zero was not in the bag that we got from the Source. The Tomorrow's publication, Comics Go Hollywood, wasn't in there. A couple of other things, you know, weren't included in the bag that we got from the Source. But I'm wondering if they just got a smaller number and, say, the first 20 people in line got bags with everything in them. Because that article that you linked to on the website about the cost of the comics was pretty revealing. And it does make me feel more like I should take Mike's side. And Mike believes that for Free Comic Book Day, the producers should be
the ones footing the bill.
The ones footing the bill.
Right. Because it's really just a big marketing campaign
for
them.
What's that?
It's the comic book shops then that are paying for it?
Well, yes and no. I mean, the comic shops pay a discounted rate for these comics, but they still have to pay for the comics.
Yeah, it's
but
between.
Yeah, I didn't realize that.
They in you should go to the website and read the article that Marty linked to on it about the costs involved and the retailers talking about the costs involved and why they carry some issues and not other issues and, you know, what they're deciding to do year to year to year.
Yeah.
It was actually very, very interesting.
Does
yeah,
it...
no, I never really thought about it. I mean, I do make a point to go, like, to buy a little extra beyond what I usually do when I go in there. So I got my usual subscriptions, and sometimes usually I'll maybe get a book that looks interesting, or an independent or something. But this time, you know, I went and I got my subscription that I picked up my free books, and then I bought, like, three other books. Like, actual books.
What did,
paperbacks and stuff.
What did you buy?
I bought JSA by Kingdom Come, the first
yep.
volume of that, which I love Kingdom Come. It's one of the very first, like, besides, like, non-Sandman, non-Vertigo-y comic books I picked up way, way back when.
Yeah.
At a Borders and not at a comic book shop. So you can cross over from Borders to comic book shops. It's going to be to happen.
Well, especially when you live in a town of really well-appointed, well-lit, cool comic shops you can
yeah.
just walk into.
And then I also got a Neil Gaiman thing, The Facts in the Case of the Departure of Miss Finch.
Oh, yeah. That was Neil Gaiman?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
And I got one other thing that isn't popping to mind right now. I can't remember what it was, but there was something else. Oh, and I picked up a couple of, like, just issues of stuff from the independent racks that I didn't feel like I had never seen before.
Like what?
One was called Local.
Local,
I... And the other was called Perhaponauts, which I like the name.
Have you never read Local before?
No.
I
never even heard of it. I just saw the cover, and the cover looked cool.
It's Brian Wood, who does DMZ, and, it's one that I really feel like I should have been buying. I've seen it at the local conventions. There's the artist of it has been to the local conventions.
And I think he is either one of the artists from American Virgin.
Yeah. Yep.
Ooh, who it, okay, so I got totally sucked into American Virgin for a while just for their lusty covers, and finally kind of couldn't take the store anymore and stopped getting it. But
see, yeah, because you sent it to me, and I've got it on my to-read shelf. I haven't read it yet.
Yeah, for a brief period of time, I really liked it, and then I just suddenly didn't anymore.
Okay.
And I don't think it changed. I think I just, there was only so much of it that I
mm-hmm.
could take.
I know that feeling, yeah.
Which issue of Local did you get?
I got number 11.
And where?
There's only one more to go.
Where does that take place?
That took place in Ontario.
Okay. Each issue of Local takes place in a locale, and the artist is very good at rendering that locale. The one that takes place in Minneapolis shows the Wedge, and I think it shows the Red Dragon.
Mm.
Hums, Liquor, they're all featured in it. And so,
yeah,
so he stood on,
like,
one street corner. Yeah, well,
this
is true.
Stories,
there's...
But that involve a through character, from what I've gathered. So, yeah, I think once the final issue comes out, I'm going to wait and, like, get the collected, rather than trying to track down. Because I looked to see if they had any of previous issues, and they had, like 2 and 7. So I think I'm going to wait till the collected volume comes out and buy that.
So what?
Like,
what number has Minneapolis in it? I forget. Big Brain, I think, has the entire run, and I should just go and get them. Big Brain actually has a section featuring Brian Wood. Like, they have all the Brian Wood stuff in one spot.
So I assume he's actually a local artist.
Well, he's the writer, I don't think he's from the Twin Cities.
Oh, he's not? They just decided to feature him anyway?
Maybe he is. I don't know.
I don't know either.
That'd be cool if he was. You know, we could look it up, but we're using both computers for this.
Yeah, there's actually a third computer.
Oh, there is.
Yes. But, so I am sleepy. Are you guys ready to wrap it up and have another conversation another time?
We could. We're at 50 minutes, so this might be a good time to...
Okay.
I'm sure that Susie and I could probably talk for another hour or more.
Well, that's what we'll get to do next week.
All right.
Yeah.
So tune in next time.
to hear.
Marty, did you actually watch any of the Marvel DC stuff?
Yeah,
we watched a ton of it the other night until we were literally falling asleep in front of the computer on the couch.
Is it better than some of the big storylines from either Marvel or DC?
Oh my god,
completely.
That's great.
You're talking about the action figure thing, right?
Yes.
Marvel. I'm a Marvel, I'm a DC.
Do we have that linked on the blog?
No, I've got like a post about it actually half composed.
Okay,
yeah,
we should get that up there.
Oh, you do?
Oh, Susie, you should
yeah.
go first. You haven't posted in a while.
It's
a
race.
No, I keep meaning to and then getting distracted.
That's funny.
But I will do that. I promise. Maybe
awesome.
Tomorrow.
Someday. If I don't beat you to it.
But yeah, it's gone way beyond the parody of a Mac NPC ad.
Yes.
To like actually really involved intricate plot lines that are also really, really, really funny.
Uh-huh.
And
turning
yeah.
to like somebody who clearly loves the characters and all their little
they know like really minute details about every one of them and then rip on it completely. It's very entertaining.
I haven't seen all of them, but so far I think my favorite is the one that introduces Batman. And, you know, Spider-Man's like, my movie's great, blah, blah, blah. And then I'm Batman. Shut up.
Yeah, Batman's definitely my favorite.
Yeah, he's featured pretty prominently in the later ones. And yeah, there is like a whole like crisis plot line going on.
Right now there is?
Like,
yeah.
They did a first season, and that, like, the season finale ended with the conclusion to the crisis.
Oh, my
and
God.
And then we just started a second season.
Oh, I have to
we
catch up.
We haven't gotten through the first season yet, have we?
No, we haven't.
It's, like, way more emotionally, I was so much more emotionally involved with that than I was in, like Infinite Crisis.
Well,
so what we've
it's because it's better written than Infinite Crisis.
Well, so, Susie, maybe you know, well, there's this, like, most of the ones that we've been watching are labeled After Hours.
Yeah, that's it.
That's the first season? Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And then the new season that started, I think there's three episodes, I should say, so far, is called Happy Hour. And it seems to... the major plot, I think, so is going to be involving a love triangle between the Joker, Harley Quinn, and the Green Goblin.
Oh, that'll make Green Goblin happy, according to the first season.
Yes.
That's hilarious.
It's pretty great.
Well, great. Now I'm not going
to
sleep tonight.
Go to YouTube. I'm now speaking to anybody who might be listening to this. Go to YouTube and search for the name of the creator, the guy who does all the voices and does all the action figures and stuff. His name on YouTube is It's Just Some Random Guy. Search for him and it'll all pop up.
Yes, and we will actually provide a link, which is much easier.
Okay, that too.
Someday.
But yeah, and you can subscribe to him, and that way it'll just, you know, tell you when a new one's up.
Yeah, although we did have to kind of look at his website rather than YouTube to get the right order. Because YouTube, it pops up in order of, like, how many people rated it or something instead of the order that it was posted.
Yeah, if you subscribe to it, you don't have to do that.
Oh.
Right. It was actually...
It will send it to you and it will send you an email when it happens, but you can go to your subscription page and it'll have a latest videos for each person you're subscribed to.
Yeah, I mean, and when we say his website, it was just
his
profile on YouTube. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, that's
yeah.
it. I see.
Okay, well, we'll sign off now.
Okay.
Good night, Susie. Thank you for joining us.
No problem. I'll talk to you tomorrow, probably.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.